All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense for this Friday, February 17th. I'm Pat Kreitlow, and it's another beautiful day on Lake Wissota. It's going to be a nice, quiet weekend. And then weatherology meteorologist Jennifer Wachitsky is going to be along later to say that this quiet weather pattern will not continue into next week. It's going to get colder, probably snowier, maybe a lot snowier. I don't know. We'll find out from her a little bit later on in the program. Let's see. Coming up this morning, we're going to talk to Kia Vakil and ask this one question. Social Security. Maybe we just fix it? See, there's been a lot of talk lately about Republicans and their stated desire to kill Social Security. And then they say that's not what we really want to do. And then they call it a Ponzi scheme. And then we say, okay, so you want to get rid of it? And they're like, no, we want to keep it. They want to get rid of it. How about if we just fix the shortfall in Social Security once and for all? It can be done. It can be done rather easily. But it's not getting done, at least not yet, but two members of the Wisconsin congressional delegation are co-sponsoring a bill for that fix. And so we will talk to Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil to tell us what that's all about as we review some of the other national political headlines of the week. We'll also later in the program talk to Mark Jacob, a former editor with the Chicago Tribune and Chicago Sun-Times, who now watches the media for us. And Our plea to these newsrooms that we watch throughout the week is to quote Chandler Bing from Friends, get there faster. If a powerful elected official announced that he was a white supremacist and was going to bully educators into a sharp reduction of teaching about Black history and racism, you would expect media outlets to treat him as a racist, right? But as long as he doesn't call himself a racist, some newsrooms would prefer to call him an underdog who is building his brand and going up against the establishment, even if that particular powerful politician, by virtue of his power, is the establishment. We will talk about the frustratingly slow pace of national journalists who recognize actual threats to democracy and American values. And we should be hearing from UW Eau Claire Athletic Director Dan Schumacher, as we do on Fridays. He just plays the role of my guest sportscaster as we talk about sports and things that are coming up for the weekend. A lot going on here on a Friday. I feel like I'm compelled to say it two times because of the annoying song that gets stuck in my head, thanks to Aaron. And Aaron Zommers is here with us now. Aaron, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. I'm finding that song right now.
I was afraid you were going to say that. If you want to reach the program, we have a couple of phone numbers. Keep in mind, there is 844-967-2789 or the Up North line, 715-388-7155. You can email us radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Again, Up North News is a separate entity from Civic Media and its radio stations. And we're thrilled to be here on the Civic Media real estate for a couple of hours every day. But you can find the work we do at upnorthnewswi.com or upnorthnewswi on social media. Any major plans for the weekend for you, Mr. Aaron?
Not really. Do I have any plans? I don't remember. What about you?
we're going to see some old friends, because we're all old now. So I think old friends is the operative term here, but friends that we haven't seen for a very long time. And so we're looking forward to catching up. It's been a while. We're all going to say exactly what you think we're going to say. Oh my God, how can your kids be that big already or that old? How can your kids be in college already? Whatever the case may be. They're going to say to us, you have four grandkids now. How can that be? You're too young. We'll say, yep, we know. But all in all, it's still going to be really nice. So I'm looking forward to seeing those folks. So that's kind of our big plan here.
Well, that should be exciting.
Yeah, should be. One more reminder, our conversation online this week has been our question of the week about tipping and whether you have changed how you tip for service. Are you still a 15% tipper? Do you go bigger? Do you give to tip jars? Do you just boycott the whole thing and just go to restaurants with no tipping policies? We'd like to know what you think. You can go to that post online at Facebook and tell us more about, you know, your thoughts on that subject. And we've got what I believe is a very aromatic subject for our question next week. So you'll want to stay tuned to that. Let's see. I want to give that one more reminder. Well, it won't be the last one, though. The last ones will be coming up Monday and Tuesday. There is an election on Tuesday, a very important one for Wisconsin Supreme Court. Four candidates, two happen to be conservative, two happen to be progressive, and they are all vying for one open seat. And that one open seat will determine if conservatives keep their 4-3 majority or if progressives, if one of the progressive candidates wins the seat and flips control of the court, it could mean an earlier end to the state's 1849 abortion ban. It could mean an earlier end to rigging the maps. And by the way, on Monday, we're going to talk to Carlene Becken from Fair Maps, so the Fair Maps Coalition of Wisconsin, about gerrymandering, aka cheating. But again, it's this Wisconsin Supreme Court race that could really play a role in fixing that sooner. Or if a conservative candidate wins, it locks in the abortion ban and the rigged maps for probably another decade. So do vote on Tuesday. You get to vote for one justice candidate. The top two advance to the general election on April 4th. We'll take a look at some other headlines in the news when we come right back. This is Up North News Radio for a Friday. We're going to wait till 6:50 when we do our usual music break to tell you the significance that we're playing an Eagles tune here, and then you'll hear one later on, and then you'll hear one after that, because it's Friday and the host of the show likes the Eagles, and they're part of our musical history rundown that we'll have for you a little bit later on this hour. If you want to reach the show at all, 715-388-7155 or 844-967-2789. And then there's a new feature that we added this week. If you are watching instead of listening on our great civic media radio stations, but if you are watching on one of three different Facebook pages, we know that if you want to leave some comments down below there, we now have the ability to put those comments up on our screen and share them with the rest of the audience. So that's, again, if you're watching on the Facebook page. We're on a couple of Twitter feeds as well. But sorry, you can blame Elon, but we don't have the capacity to put your tweets up on screen. But if you go to the Facebook page, it's either for Up North News or for Civic Media or for Bow Falls Radio, then you can put your comments up and we might share them with the audience depending on the topic at hand. Our handles for Facebook, you'll find Up North News by searching for Up North News WI. For Civic Media, look for Civic Media US. And for Bull Falls Radio in Wausau, it's Bull Falls Radio. Rather quiet day in sports to tell you about. The NBA All-Star Game is coming up this weekend. And so the Bucks, who now have 12 wins in a row after beating the Chicago Bulls, will be not be back in action until a week from tonight at home against Miami. In the meantime, Giannis will be captain for the Eastern Conference team in the All-Star Game coming up this weekend. The Badger men's basketball team will be playing at home tomorrow against Rutgers. And the Marquette men's basketball team will be playing at Creighton, but not until next Tuesday. And then Brewers spring training, as we know, got underway. The first spring training game is a week from tomorrow. And then the season begins now under 6 weeks away on Thursday, March 30th. There was a state Supreme Court decision. And, you know, for all of the things that we have said about the state Supreme Court race and the importance of it, there is quite frequently sharp ideological, you could arguably say, partisan differences between the justices on the court. And sometimes that is amazingly frustrating when you have a conservative majority that brings a political bent into its decision making to do things like take away ballot drop boxes or to ditch common sense safeguards, you know, against spreading COVID during a pandemic. So when you do get those moments of, I guess the word is bipartisan agreement on the state Supreme Court, it's noteworthy. And there was a decision handed down yesterday that would have been noteworthy regardless, whether it was 4-3 or 5-2. This was 7-0. And what it is something about a tax theory, if you will, called the dark store loophole. And it's something that I had tried to deal with as a state legislator 15 years ago. It comes up every couple of years when the legislature starts a new session, that there has to be a way around this dark store loophole. And finally, a court case advanced to the point in the Wisconsin Supreme Court that in one particular instance, that dark store loophole was struck down. And while it may not take it away in all instances, it definitely opens the door to fairer tax treatment at the local level. So now let's give you some background. And I'm going to borrow substantially here from Henry Redman over at the Wisconsin Examiner. And that is definitely a story you should be reading over at wisconsinexaminer.com. The case involves a Lowe's home improvement store and the city of Delavan. And the Supreme Court unanimously struck down Lowe's appeal of an assessment. When local assessors determine value for property taxes, they look at the value of a building in the here and now. And that includes big box stores like Lowe's and, you know, Menards and Target and things like that. Well, something happened sometime in the past, I don't know, maybe 20 years or so. I don't have the history of it in front of me. But some of these large merchants found a loophole, and the loophole was being sustained quite frequently, in part because of the threat of lawsuits if they didn't get their way. And here's the loophole. They argued that their building should be valued not based on the customers going in and out and the profits that they're ringing up and all the sales and then all the value that it adds to other buildings that pop up around that big box store. No, they're saying the value of their building for tax purposes is basically just the building. And if that building were sitting there empty, in other words, dark, what would it be valued at? And they were saying that you should value our store no different than a dark store, a store that's been closed up for years sitting on a vacant lot, because that's all you're taxing is the building, right? Which is not at all in the, you know, the spirit of how taxes are assessed at a local level when you're looking at the economy of an area. And that store, which is open, is using resources in the community. It's using the roads. It's hiring the workers. It's using the electricity. It's generating huge profits oftentimes for these big retailers. But these big national retailers have been looking for ways not to pay their fair share of taxes. In this particular instance, when Lowe's appealed their tax assessment, they used as comparisons or comps, for those of you who watch HGTV and are always hearing about comparable buildings for pricing, the comps that they used were, again, these stores that had been dark. They were, for example, defunct American TV and appliance stores that had been closed through receivership, meaning that they were closed up in order to cover the business's debts. And so it was not a true sale. You're not really comparing apples to apples about selling a building versus a business that has been shut down because of receivership. And then there was the Lowe's folks used a closed former Kmart that had been vacant for 4 years. They used a Walmart in Brown Deer that had been a Lowe's but closed after only 5 years in that location and sat vacant for 2 years. Meanwhile, the city of Delavan hired an outside expert to look at that assessment. What should that Lowe's be worth? And the city's expert used for comparison purposes, properties that had all been sold while they were still occupied. And that's much more of an apples-to-apples comparison. And all seven justices agreed that you cannot... Well, let me use the words of Ann Walsh Bradley, one of the progressive justices. Generally, a site that can sustain a business is more valuable than one that cannot. The highest and best use of a store in an area that is conducive to business and is in fact operating as a business is different from the highest and best use of a property that contains a failed big box store. Lowe's argument treats these things alike, which is not an apples to apples comparison. And the League of Wisconsin Municipalities reacted again in Henry Redmond's story in the Wisconsin Examiner, where Jerry Duchesne from the League of Wisconsin Municipalities calls it a tremendous win for taxpayers. The court, in his view, has finally put to rest the use of dark stores in our communities. I think it stuck a fork in the strategy. It's done. There are places where it's reasonable to use a vacant property as a comparable sale, but not to the extent that people that proposed the philosophy wanted it to go. The court rejected it six ways to Sunday. To which I would say, I hope he's right, but I could also see some version of this where, again, they don't get as extreme as Lowe's does in their comparisons, but does find some other way to, you know, finagle their property taxes. This is not completely the same as, but not far from, the way that Donald Trump runs his businesses and holds on to money and doesn't pay his fair share of taxes, is that when he's getting taxed on properties, he's like, oh, it's so bad here. Things are just not good. And you shouldn't be valuing us like that. But then when they go to sell it, it's, you know, oh, they're asking for the moon and the stars because this is such a successful place. And while that might be human nature or business nature to try to do that to the extent that you can, it is certainly possible to abuse that, something that plenty of businesses and people do to great success. But at least now, when it comes to using completely darkened vacant stores as a comparable to a store that is operating and thriving, maybe the whole talk of this dark store loophole can finally be put away once and for all. There has been a lot said about TikTok and the Chinese government's role in its ownership and therefore its potential to monitor its users. And that may be true, but every time that we've heard from politicians about this and that we have to ban TikTok. And you know, for the record, I don't use TikTok. I've tried to use it. I have found it to be actually rather redundant, you know. But it's there and people use it all the time, and that's okay. But my thought has been, okay, I think you're doing this mostly for pandering purposes, that it happens to be owned by the Chinese government, when there are also problems here at home with technology that should be looked at. And I bring that up because yesterday, Senator Tammy Baldwin called on Meta, which is the parent company of Facebook, to do more about the drug trafficking and human smuggling communications that are taking place on their platforms. In a letter to Meta chairman and CEO Mark Zuckerberg, the senator and others cited the findings of numerous investigations regarding the company's entirely inadequate content moderation and enforcement mechanisms, particularly for Spanish language content, and underscored the need for Meta to take urgent action to address these harmful shortcomings. And we're going to talk more about that next week with State Representative Jody Emerson of Eau Claire, who, prior to her time as a legislator, and certainly since then, has been vocal on the need to do more about human trafficking, make people aware of it right here in Wisconsin, that this is something that goes on and something that we should be aware of, and certainly something that technology companies should be doing more about as well. Well, Aaron, I mentioned that if folks wrote in on Facebook, we'd put their comments up. Let's take a look at what's in the mailbag so far here. Here's one from posted on Facebook by Aaron Zommers. My, what a handsome producer you have.
Oh, stop.
Well, there there it is. It's a comment. So there it is right there on screen for posterity. You know, take a screen grab of that. That's your high point for the day, Zommers.
There we go.
Take a break. When we come back, Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil, you're up north.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
As usual, this time on Fridays, we talk to Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil. He, of course, is based in Los Angeles, and so we talked to him a day or so prior about things going on nationally. And so on the backside of my conversation with him, we'll give a little update on a lawsuit involving abortion medication. But first, we talked about Social Security and a way to fix its problem that two members of Congress from Wisconsin are working on. So here's our discussion. And Kia Vakil joins us now. Kia, do you want to give us a rendition of Fly Eagles Fly before we get going here, or?
I will spare you all my singing voice, but appreciate the thought. Yeah, that was an unfortunate ending.
It was a hell of a game, and you do have, I mean, Mahomes is Mahomes, but I mean, you had a quarterback that you can absolutely, I mean, again, we've got Aaron Rodgers here. You should be very proud of what you've got going over there. It was a great year. I was otherwise going to say, here's Kia Vakil coming out of his, you know, 4 days in darkness. But, you know, again, Rodgers is doing it literally. Eagles fans were just doing it, you know, figuratively. So anyway, congrats again on a great season.
Thank you. I worked really hard at it. So
you always have to work hard being a Philly sports fan, especially one living in LA. But there you are covering national news for us for Courier Newsroom and for Up North News. And we appreciate that very much. So as we review, you know, last week we talked a lot about State of the Union matters. And again, if anybody out there has not read it yet, please go to upnorthnewswi.com and read Kia's article. Was it seven takeaways from the State of the Union?
Yes.
Okay. Seven takeaways from the State of the Union. You really ought to see that. But let's start with, you know, one thing that has really been a big topic, and that is Social Security and Medicare, because again, in a case of, are you going to believe me or are you going to believe your lying eyes? People like Ron Johnson are still saying, well, we don't want to cut it. And then like in the very next breath, they say, it's a Ponzi scheme. So, I mean, it's still out there. And so you've at least got folks like Wisconsin congressional reps, Mark Pocan and Gwen Moore, basically saying, hey, can we advance this issue and find a way to save Social Security? They seem to have a pretty good idea how to do it.
Yeah. So the representatives Pocan and Moore are two of, I believe it's 37 Democrats who introduced a bill this week that would expand Social Security benefits by $200 a month for every beneficiary and ensure it's fully funded for the next 75 years. So basically, anyone who's alive today, the vast majority of them would be guaranteed Social Security when they get older without, you know, any worries about running out of funding. And so this bill effectively would not touch 93% of families. They would not pay a dime more in taxes or a penny more. That 7% that would are people who earn above $250,000 a year. And, you know, primarily the bill would raise taxes on billionaires and millionaires who currently, you know, the way Social Security is set up, any income above $160,000 roughly is not subjected to the payroll tax that funds Social Security. So this bill would raise effectively income above $250,000 would become, you know, taxed. So you have right now Elon Musk paying the same amount into Social Security as someone who earns $160,000 a year. That's, this bill would change that. And so effectively, you know, the bill would secure Social Security, which Republicans say they want to do, by raising taxes, which is really the only way to do it. And it only raises taxes on 7% of people.
Yeah, you know this, but I'm going to say it out loud anyway. My God, for over 10 years, I've been saying this to people that, and people still don't know that the Social Security tax stops at $162,000. You know, it's indexed, for inflation and such. But that, yeah, a billionaire, you know, pays Social Security tax on that first $162,000, which they make usually by January 4th or 5th, something like that. And then they're done. They're treated the same as somebody that lives in the suburbs, you know, making $160,000 a year. So it's absolutely amazing that more people don't know it. And I would offer whatever free advice I can to Mark Pocan, Gwen Moore, and the other sponsors is feel free to keep talking about that, because that thing alone can keep Social Security going for a good long time. Oh, by the way, it's not going to go anywhere. The Republicans control the House of Representatives, but at least there's a plan out there instead of whining that, you know, we need to save it and we need to cut it. Pick one.
Yeah. And it's a popular plan. There was a poll that showed 78% of likely voters support the bill released just this week. And that's includes a majority of Republicans. So voters. So there's a plan. It's just, you know, there's no political will among Republicans and probably the handful of conservative Democrats that are still in office.
Yeah. Well, in other policy news that has taken effect, there's the bipartisan, you know, infrastructure bill and other things that the Biden administration has been putting into effect. And one of the notes that came out, middle of this week was that the EPA is going to be earmarking more money from the bipartisan infrastructure law to address contaminants in Wisconsin water. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So one big aspect of that bill, or that law, rather, is efforts to clean up drinking water and, you know, communities that have contaminants in their drinking water. One of those big contaminants is, you know, these forever chemicals called PFAS that are present in drinking water all across the country, especially, you know, in the Midwest and places like Wisconsin and Michigan. Every state is getting some level of funding to address it because, again, it's a nationwide problem. Wisconsin is included in that. So these funds will be, I believe, grants that will be distributed to communities to help address the problem and remove PFAS from the drinking water.
Okay. While people are focused on policy and things that, you know, help people across the board, it seems like far too many people over in the right wing simply want to fight the next, you know, culture battle in some way, shape, or form. And we are still seeing, you would think I was going to say dozens, but I think I'm about to say hundreds of bills targeting folks in the LGBTQ community in our state legislatures. This is a parade of ugliness, in, you know, my words, not yours, that just rolls on and on, and that number continues to rise, Kia.
Yeah, I just checked, and it's up to more than 300, rising every single day. And that's just introduced this year, 2023. So that's 6 weeks, 300 some bills, and that's only 30 some odd states that are in legislative sessions. Now, to be fair, you know, almost half of those bills come from a handful of states like Texas, Tennessee, you know, Oklahoma, North Dakota, Mississippi, but like deep red states, but they're happening in a ton of states. They're happening in Virginia and North Carolina and Michigan and Minnesota. Most of them are just bills, but they all target members of the gay, lesbian, transgender, queer community, predominantly transgender youth. They're trying to ban gender affirming care for teenagers. And basically what that means is they're trying to ban, you know, things that might help a 16-year-old trans kid who's questioning their desire to live. It's going to ban the thing that will keep them alive. And that's really at the end of the day what it comes down to is, you know, obviously there's a lot of, unfortunately, debate over, you know, gender affirming care and if, you know, what it, you know, whether what rights or what age is appropriate for transgender youth to begin doing that. And that's, you know, a fine debate to have at a medical level. But at a political level, what you're saying is this person does not have the right to exist as who they are. And that's what Republican legislators are doing. And, you know, a lot of times it gets caught up in, you know, this culture war framing, and they do turn it into this sort of battle over that. But at the end of the day, they're targeting individuals' rights to exist and to be who they are in school and in life.
And maybe to be more helpful, these politicians would, like here in Wisconsin, be more supportive of what Governor Evers is proposing to increase access for mental health services in schools and beyond in Wisconsin, because goodness knows we all could benefit from greater resources to be able to talk to people and not have those, you know, suicidal feelings, especially when you know, politicians, you know, treat you like you're trash. So we'll continue to monitor that. But then we get to the abortion issue. And as I was looking through some of the things that you're working on, it looks like there's a federal judge in Texas that this federal judge alone might have a significant impact on ways for women to get abortion care even after the repeal of Roe v. Wade. What's that about?
Yeah, so there is this lawsuit filed by a very right-wing anti-abortion group. They filed it specifically in Texas in this, you know, district court because they knew it would go to this judge who was appointed by President Trump, who is as far right and as anti-abortion as it gets. His name is Matthew Kaczmarek. He, you know, is very anti-abortion, anti-LGBTQ, anti-immigrant, and has already issued rulings since becoming a judge that are basically just advancing extreme right-wing ideology. And so in this case, he could effectively ban medication abortion in all 50 states. Even if abortion is legal in your state, he could issue a ruling effectively reversing the FDA's approval for one of the pills, mifepristone, that's used in medication abortions, which comprise more than half of all abortions now. So this would impact women from Wisconsin to California to Florida to New York and everywhere in between. And, you know, that's devastating. And, you know, the Biden administration says they'll appeal it if he makes that ruling. But if it goes to the Supreme Court, who knows what will happen?
Oh, we sadly have a theory of what might happen. So let's try to end on some good news. We began more or less with some good news about the bipartisan infrastructure law. Let's end on the Inflation Reduction Act, because, again, you're looking more at the impact of the Inflation Reduction Act and all of the clean energy jobs that could be created in Wisconsin and elsewhere.
Yeah. So the Inflation Reduction Act, you know, as we've discussed in the past, you know, creates incentives and tax credits and all sorts of things to both, you know, help companies, to incentivize companies to manufacture clean energy and ramp that up, and to locate, you know, projects and jobs in the U.S. And so in the 6 months since it's passed, it's already spurred more than 100,000 clean energy job announcements across the country. That includes, you know, I believe it's 200 jobs in Wisconsin. You know, a lot of jobs are in Michigan and all across the country. And, you know, these jobs are, that's just in 6 months, more than 100,000 jobs have been announced. You know, some of these jobs have obviously not been created yet, but because of that law, companies are investing in America and creating manufacturing facilities and planning on everything from solar panels to car batteries being made in America with American labor, which means jobs. And so that's huge. That's going to transform, you know, the infrastructure of this country and the workforce.
Which, again, not a single Republican supported the Inflation Reduction Act and all of these jobs that'll come for it. But in closing, we'll just use Joe Biden's line from the State of the Union speech to his Republican friends who voted against it. I'm sure I'll still see you at the ribbon cutting when this is all said and done. Kiev Akil, thank you again so much. I appreciate the overview of what we've been looking at across the country this week, and we'll talk to you again soon.
You bet. Go Birds.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, we thank Kia for that. Here's a quick update. Attorneys general from 21 Democratic-leaning states are calling on a Texas judge to keep the abortion pill on the market. This from the Wisconsin Examiner. Yeah, the brief was filed in the case to bring and will likely bring more attention to a lawsuit that could have sweeping nationwide effects for medication abortion. And that would include on that list Josh Call from Wisconsin, who joined in that brief, who argued that medication abortion is safe and effective. It has been proven by 22 years of approved use. It is, let's see, it says here, the availability of mifepristone has been particularly critical in providing access to abortions in low-income, underserved, and rural communities where procedural abortion may be unavailable. And they respond to the Republican attorneys general who claim that there have been many adverse side effects, but don't really bring up proof of it, and say the Democratic attorneys general say it would be impossible to cover up that high a number of complications given its widespread use. And in fact, the opposite is true, that that this is safe for women. And it's just one more way that we can get government out of doctors' exam rooms. Let's take a break for this day in history and a little bit of music as well. All ahead on a Friday here on Up North News Radio. All right, the reason we've been playing Eagles tune so far this hour is because it's the first note in our This Day in History music break. It was on this day in 1976 that the Eagles released the album Their Greatest Hits, 1971-75. For the longest time, it was the biggest selling album of all time and is still in the top five with sales of an estimated 44 million copies. So let's see now, if I tell you they're number five on the list and we bring in Aaron Zommers, noted musical expert of the Up North News radio show, see if he can, how many of the top four album sales he can name. I know you're going to get the top one because it's an easy one.
Yeah, Thriller.
I'd be Thriller is number one on the list with 70 million copies sold compared to 44 million for the Eagles. Now, do you want to take a guess at the other three?
I'm going to say one of them is another Eagles Greatest Hits album. Am I right about that?
No, but right below them at number six on the list is the Eagles Hotel California album. So between that one, and both of them, by the way, were released in 1976. If you combined those two, they would actually top Thriller. So the Eagles, they had quite the run there in the mid-70s and beyond of people wanting to buy their albums. So Eagles 5 and 6. We said Thriller is number one. You want to take one more guess at numbers 2, 3, or 4 on the top-selling albums of all time?
I know we've talked about these before, too, at least some of them. I am blanking right now. What do we got?
Okay. Number 2 would be AC/DC, Back in Black, with 50 million sold. Number 3 would be Whitney Houston, the soundtrack to The Bodyguard, with 45 million sold. And Pink Floyd, that's one I thought you'd guess for sure, Dark Side of the Moon, with also 45 million copies sold.
Yeah, probably should have, but oh well.
Are you one of those folks who like, they talk about Dark Side of the Moon, is that the one where you put the needle on the record at such and such a time and then something happens right at midnight, or you play it during the Wizard of Oz? You don't do anything like that, do you? You're looking at me like I have a horns growing out of my head or something, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, I did the Wizard of Oz. I can't think of what the name of it is. Oh, Dark Side of the Rainbow is what they call it.
Oh, okay. I see.
It syncs up very well just because the movie is well done and follows a lot of like emotional rhythms that work, and so does the album. So it syncs up really well. The beginning is perfect. You get like the chiming of clocks as the Wicked Witch of the West is riding, I don't remember the character's name, but as she's riding it on her bike.
Dorothy. Yeah.
And then okay. It desyncs a little in the middle and then catches right back on later.
Nice. Okay. Let's see. While we're doing, let's just do the rest of the top 10 here. Number 7 on the list, Shania Twain's Come On Over. Fleetwood Mac Rumors, which I thought might be higher, but still 40 million copies sold. And then Saturday Night Fever by the Bee Gees, the disco album, is still up there on the top 10 list with an estimated 40 million sold. Let's see, we have some birthdays today. Wow, look who turned 60 years old today, Daniel Lawrence Whitney. No, you don't know him as that. You know him as Larry the Cable Guy. Larry the Cable Guy is 60 today. Michael Jordan is 60 today. How do you like that? Both of these gentlemen born on the exact same day. One became the greatest basketball player of all time, and the other became Larry the Cable Guy. And they both did all right for themselves, but I'm having a hard time seeing them both in the maternity ward on the same day and going, you're going this way, you're going that way.
Oh, yeah. It's quite the dichotomy.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt is 42 today. Ed Sheeran is 32. And Billy Joe Armstrong is 51 years old today. He, of course, is the singer, songwriter, guitarist for Green Day, recorded his first song at the age of 5 and dropped out of high school the day before his 18th birthday in order to record the first Green Day album in the days to follow. So he did pretty all right for himself and, again, turns 51 today, although his life has definitely had its share of bumps in the road. We would love to tell you that this is the 51st birthday as well, also born the same day. Taylor Hawkins, drummer of the Foo Fighters, would have been 51 years old today were it not for his passing last year. Let's see. Eric Clapton released his 7th solo album, Another Ticket, which had a hit or two, including this one on this day in 1981. On this day in 1978, Kate Bush released her debut album, The Kick Inside. And then one more historical note. It was on this day in 1801 that we had our first presidential election tie. There was a tie in the Electoral College between Thomas Jefferson and Aaron Burr. It would eventually be resolved with Jefferson elected president and Burr, his opponent, vice president. Needless to say, they noticed that there was a flaw in the original constitutional plan for presidential elections. Although I would hasten to add, the rules were written before the development of political parties, something that George Washington and others warned against, but they did develop. The election of 1800 was extremely bitter between Thomas Jefferson and Aaron Burr, but the way that it resolved itself in the end was that Jefferson became president, Burr vice president, and I cannot even fathom if we had those kind of rules today. Imagine Donald Trump serving as Joe Biden's vice president.
Nothing good would happen. Things would happen. It would just be basically.
It would totally live up to that, to the phrase, everything Trump touches dies, which, you know, was very nearly democracy itself, and can't even imagine what it would be like if those circumstances were around today. Stayed up a little too late last night, Aaron, as I finally finished the final 3 episodes of Wednesday, the Addams Family, sequel on Netflix. And you said you've not dipped into that one yet?
Correct. Yeah, I still haven't started it.
Okay. I would still recommend it as highly as I did after I'd seen the first couple of episodes. You know, it gets a little away from the Hogwarts kind of, you know, school comedy. As it goes along, we get deeper into a mystery, and it becomes much more of solving the mystery at that point. So if you are big into mysteries and wonder at the very beginning, you know, is this going anyplace? Yes, it is. And if you're much more on the, hey, I like this as a comedy, you know, maybe the last couple of episodes, you won't laugh as much as you would in the first couple of episodes. But all in all, I mean, it's it's 8 episodes. Wraps up nicely, certainly leaves room for a second season. And I haven't looked to see if Wednesday's been renewed for a second season. I can't imagine it wouldn't be for the kind of attention it got.
It's been extremely successful.
You know, which means now I've got to go back to, because it takes me forever to catch up on things. We are still only halfway through season 1 of Only Murders in the Building.
Oh, you definitely got to finish that. That's a great show.
Well, that's where we're going to go next. We had been watching that, and then we heard that Wednesday was particularly good. So, yeah, we'll come back to Only Murders because I think they're on season 3. And we got to finish that because the new season of Ted Lasso is coming out in just a couple few weeks here. Let's take a break for news, and then Mark Jacob, Dan Schumacher, and more coming up in our next hour. You're up north.